Translation. Lord Sri Krishna said, O mighty armed son of Kunti, it is undoubtedly very difficult to curb the restless mind, but it is possible by suitable practice and by detachment. Please repeat. Lord Sri Krishna said, O mighty armed son of Kunti, it is undoubtedly very difficult to curb the restless mind. But it is possible by suitable practice and by detachment. And before I read the purport, this verse is following the previous verse in which Arjuna is saying to Krishna, for the mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate, and very strong, O Krishna. And to subdue it, I think, is more difficult than controlling the wind. So this is Krishna's response, purport by Srila Prabhupada. The difficulty of controlling the obstinate mind, as expressed by Arjuna, is accepted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But at the same time, he suggests that by practice and detachment, it is possible. What is that practice? In the present age, no one can observe the strict rules and regulations of placing oneself in a sacred place, focusing the mind on the super soul, restraining the senses and mind, focusing the mind, observing celibacy, remaining alone, etc. By the practice of Krishna consciousness, however, one engages in 9 types of devotional service to the Lord. The first and foremost of such devotional engagements is hearing about Krishna. This is a very powerful transcendental method for purging the mind of all misgivings. The more one hears about Krishna, the more one becomes enlightened and detached from everything that draws the mind away from Krishna. By detaching the mind from activities not devoted to the Lord, one can very easily learn vairagya. Vairagya means detachment from matter and engagement of the mind in spirit. Impersonal spiritual detachment is more difficult than attaching the mind to the activities of Krishna. This is practical because by hearing about Krishna, one becomes automatically attached to the Supreme Lord. This attachment is called parishanubhava, spiritual satisfaction. Parishanubhava, spiritual satisfaction. It is just like the feeling of satisfaction a hungry man has for every morsel of food he eats. The more one eats while hungry, the more one feels satisfaction and strength. Similarly, by discharge of devotional service, one feels transcendental satisfaction as the mind becomes detached from material objectives. It is something like curing a disease by expert treatment and appropriate diet. Hearing of the transcendental activities of Lord Krishna is therefore expert treatment for the mad mind. It's the word Prabhupada uses. And eating the foodstuff offered to Krishna is the appropriate diet for the suffering patient. This treatment is the process of Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, Hare Krishna. Nandana invited me to sit and speak something about book distribution. And I thought, well, Nandana, you could possibly not be picking the worst person to be doing such a thing. Having thought about it, though, I decided to say yes, instead of all the no's that I've been giving him for quite some time. He sold himself well. He said it's not a formal Bhagavatam class, it's more of an informal talk to encourage whoever might be there in the forthcoming marathon. So why have I chosen this? Well, earlier on I said, well, I was spoiled for choice, but where does one begin? Because all of these transcendental shlokas and translations and purports by Srila Prabhupada, the leaders into the area of understanding how important it is to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. I always see ourselves, we young and old, getting older, aspiring devotees of Krishna, as people who Prabhupada saw as his helpers, his assistants. I'm reading just now, whether I have time to quote anything from it, I don't know. I might do, briefly. It's this beautiful biography by my godbrother Yogeshwara about Srila Prabhupada. Swami in a strange land. We can't imagine how strange this land was for Srila Prabhupada to arrive. He arrived in September 1965. And I was reading just this morning that a few months later, in January 1966, New York, which is where Prabhupada was, had the most severe winter ever on record. The snow drifts were going up to the second stories of the buildings. And Prabhupada was still in New York on his own, virtually, simply on behalf of his Guru Maharaj, who had ordered him, not even ordered him, but suggested to him that you look like a very intelligent boy, because Prabhupada was a boy when he first encountered his spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami, in 1922, I think it was, 1922 in Calcutta. At the very first meeting, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, I have noted him. He listens. And for 40-odd years after that first meeting, Prabhupada said that in my heart I knew what was my mission. And that was to bring this philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the English-speaking world, to the English-speaking countries. Now there are lots of books coming out, biographies by various godbrothers and sisters. Jamuna Devi is the foremost. I've still to finish reading that book. Two volumes, big thick volumes, about her time with Srila Prabhupada, the pure devotee. And now there's Yogeshwara, Rupa Vilas has just brought out one. I have, they're stacking up now, Bhakti Charu Swami Maharaj is another new one. Dying to read them all. Prabhupada saw us as his assistants, because his mission was to plant the philosophy of Bhagavad Dharma or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the world where people had forgotten, completely forgotten, who am I? Who is God? What is my relation with Him? Where am I from? Where do I go at the time of death? Now no one thinks about these things anymore. We're preoccupied with politics and financial greed, really. How to enjoy. Material enjoyment is what Western culture is about. And I've been very nervous for the last few days, wondering what to read and what to talk about. And what stood out for me in this particular purport was how frequently Prabhupada spoke about hearing. This is practical, he says, because by hearing about Krishna, one becomes automatically attached to the Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada wanted us to help him distribute his books of knowledge. He was the self-realized soul. So his words were and are perfect. And by reading and hearing what he's saying in these books, then it's possible for those who we meet on a daily basis on the streets to stop thinking in a certain way and to begin thinking in another way. And it's revolutionary. Prabhupada was the extreme revolutionary. Even before he met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he was a bit of a revolutionary. He was a follower of Mahatma Gandhi, an activist. He mixed with other activists and they spoke about how society had to change by following the philosophy of Mahatma Gandhi, and we should become independent from British rule. He was very strong on this one. In fact, he spoke about this when he first met his spiritual master. When it came time for questions after the talk that he gave, Prabhupada put his hand up and he said, "But how do you expect people to listen to us if we're still under the rule of someone else? First of all, surely we should be independent of foreign rule, and then people would take us more seriously." So even then, Prabhupada was outspoken. But he said that his spiritual master was able to explain things so well that he knew, "I've met my spiritual master." On that very day, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, "There's no time for this. Time is of the essence. What people lack is not necessarily independence from foreign rule. What people lack is Krishna consciousness. And that can be found here, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita. People need liberation from birth, old age, disease, and death more than they need liberated from the British government." And it made such sense at that time that it became Prabhupada's mission from there on. And that's why in another of my dear godbrothers, give me a moment, Satswarup Maharaj, he was the first one to write a biography of the life of Srila Prabhupada. And the first volume was called A Lifetime in Preparation. As soon as Prabhupada first met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati on that rooftop in Calcutta, he knew that he had a mission. He had no idea how he was going to fulfill that mission. He was a family man. He was a businessman. He was a pharmacist. And so on and so forth. And the more we read about Prabhupada's life, the more we'll discover how hard it was for him. And yet, he was a very responsible man. He remained within his family life, however troublesome and tough it was. his wife and children weren't necessarily behind him at all in his mission. So it was always single-handedly that he had to consider how to come to the West with this great gift, as it were. In fact, if I can indulge, I will read a small piece of this that I've kept aside, because it's relevant as well to our Gita Shloka as well. And it's certainly relevant to what's about to begin now. And it is the glorious book marathon of 2016, subtitled The Final Offering. And Sutapa's kindly told me that this means that all this year we've been celebrating the 50th anniversary of Prabhupada's arrival in the West. And this indeed will be our final offering of the year to glorify Srila Prabhupada, who is unglorifiable, as a matter of fact. But if we're fortunate, we can continue spending the rest of our lives glorifying Srila Prabhupada in however we can. And that'll be our medicine. We can never glorify Srila Prabhupada enough. And history will tell that. It may not be that people around the world are as aware as they might be about how glorious this person was and what he achieved. That's still going on. Let me read another few lines. This is going back to those days in New York in the freezing cold, where Prabhupada had barely, he knew no one yet. Now, one of the first people that he met was Mukunda Goswami Maharaj, who we don't see too much of, unfortunately. As far as I know, he's still living in Australia. But nevertheless, he was one of the first young men. He was 22 years of age when he first came across Srila Prabhupada. This is early 1966, and Mukunda has come up into this little room. This is before Prabhupada went to Second Avenue, even before Second Avenue. But he's still in the Bowery, which I like to tell people. I come from Glasgow, and I like to tell Bowery is like the Gorbals of New York, because in Glasgow we had a place called the Gorbals, and it was just a, well, as Yogeshwara, he says that the Bowery was a place that was in extreme disrepair. That's how he describes it. Extreme disrepair. Like most other places, it's very gentrified now. You go to the Bowery, I'm told you go to the Bowery now, and it's all high-end fashion stores and places to hang out, and it's very expensive, and it's all upmarket now. But when Prabhupada was there, there were tramps and bums lying on the street outside the entranceway, and drunks and so on and so forth. And what, you know, it's like, it was the lowest. However, so Mukunda's come to check out this Swami, the old Indian chap, at the, you know, two stories up these little dark stairways in a little room. I enjoyed your talk, Grant said, that Michael Grant, that Mukunda, after the small group of guests had departed. How long have you been in America?
Almost 1 year, the Swami replied. It was in 1922, he said, that his spiritual master told him to teach in the Western countries. I was married then, working and busy with family affairs. So now, 43 years later, here I am. Then he laughed at his own tardiness and added, better late than never. Radhagokulananda ki jaya, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jaya, Gornitai ki jaya, Hare Krishna. So even then Prabhupada could laugh. That's one thing I always remember. Srila Prabhupada had a great sense of humor. No matter what he'd been through and what he was still going through, he had a great sense of humor. So even then, he says to Mukunda, he laughed, better late than never. It's taken me 43 years. Grant asked how he spent his days. The Swami motioned to a stack of papers sitting on a metal trunk. "That is my Bhagavad Gita," he said. "Someday it will be published." He pointed to three books on a small table. Those, he said, were the first canto or division of a Sanskrit work called the Srimad Bhagavatam, which he described as the postgraduate study of the Bhagavad Gita. The details of creation were revealed in this one text, he explained, and added that he had funded the printing of these first three volumes himself at great pains. And there was a tone in his voice that conveyed just how difficult the task had been. Grant lifted one of the heavy volumes. On the dust jacket was a colorful illustration rendered in a primitive style depicting planets and clouds and four armed beings, all of which I notice up here as well. Same. He removed the dust jacket and ran his hand over the book's rust-colored cloth. He opened the book, and the pages felt raw and toothy to the touch and smelled of hand-milled pulp. Grant read a paragraph at random. Typographic errors abounded, grammatical errors. The Swami explained there were 18,000 verses in the 12 cantos of the Bhagavatam and that it was his mission to translate and explain them all. Grant did a quick calculation. The old gentleman was talking about nearly 60 volumes of books. How long did he think he was going to live? Grant bought a set of books for $15. He assured the Swami he would return and headed down the dark stairs. Back home, he opened the first volume. The word unfortunate appeared frequently in the opening pages. So did the phrase Kali Yuga, which the Swami's commentary described as the current age of quarrel and confusion. That struck Grant as accurate. Americans in the 60s, caught in a vice of war and racial hatred, were not bad people, just unfortunate victims of an age of quarrel and confusion. So I think I've marked this out as well, because most of us are going out for the next month or so, on and off, in different ways and forms to distribute these books of Srila Prabhupada. It'll probably be cold. Whether it'll be as cold as this or not, we don't know. It'll be austere. It won't be easy for a lot of us most of the time. But I think the two words to bear in mind while we go out there are unfortunate. The great philosopher Plato, he once said, "Be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a hard battle." And that's why Prabhupada wanted to translate these books and why he wanted us to be his assistants in distributing them, so that the unfortunate souls here in the West could somehow get an opportunity to change the way they thought about themselves and the world around them by coming up onto the spiritual platform. Kali Yuga, quarrel, hypocrisy, and confusion. It's the same now as it was when Prabhupada arrived in New York. And we know it's going to get worse and worse and worse. It's not going to get better. It can get better for those who receive a book and hear the philosophy contained within the book. I don't want to backtrack too much, but when I came along and knocked on the door of the only temple there was in London at the time, my godbrother Tribhuvanath, who we're also celebrating tomorrow, I think, we're celebrating his appearance or disappearance, or we're going to do something tomorrow, he was an old friend of mine. When I had had enough of material life, and I'd made the choice that now I'm going to spend the rest of my life with these people, these Hare Krishna people, I hitchhiked from Yorkshire, where I was living, and I was dropped off just round the corner of Berry Place. And I'd had enough. I was finished. I knocked on the door, and Tribhuvanath opened the door, and I said, "I've come home." And I was crying, because I meant it, and it meant a lot too, because I was only 20. I was a little kid, just like Mukunda was here and these other kids. I was a little kid, for God's sake. You don't, well, normally just walk away from whatever life you've got and just somehow go into a monastery, or you wait until your life's finished. You know, you're an old geezer, and then it's time to be a monk. Generally speaking, is that, or a nun or whatever, you know, it's like, I've tried and failed and there's nothing left, I'm old, let me have some peace and quiet now, and so forth. But I was 20. But the Tribhuvanath, he opened the door, I said, "I'm home." He said, "Really?" He said, "Are you coming on the street to chant?" Because he had a mridanga around his neck. And he was going to take a group of devotees down to Oxford Street and so forth. So nothing ever changed in that regard with Tribhuvanath. But the point was that in those days there were very little books to distribute. If we were lucky, we might have had some Back to Godhead magazines, but that's if we were lucky, because all the literature came from America. You know, we had to wait, you know, because that's where the printing press was, basically. So those were the days where we had to wait, and if we didn't have anything to distribute, we'd manufacture our own. On these old Gestetner machines, really dirty, inky Gestetner mimeograph machines, and we'd somehow or other put together something or other with the basic philosophy so that we could then distribute. But they weren't very colorful or very attractive. They were just black and white and kind of inky and whatever the case. But the thing was that we had this enthusiasm that's the prime ingredient for anyone that wants to go out and distribute Prabhupada's books. It has to be there. Enthusiasm. Prabhupada wrote me in one letter, and he wrote in one letter that if you're enthusiastic, he said, you're a leader. So if you are enthusiastic, then everyone else under your care will also be enthusiastic. He said, that is the prime ingredient for Krishna consciousness. It is very simple, Prabhupada said in the letter. Simple, that simple ingredient, enthusiasm to please the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada, who's kindly saved us all. Om Gana Timarandasya Gananjana Salakhaya Chaksurun Militangyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. We say this prayer frequently. And we're honoring Srila Prabhupada and we're thanking him. We're following at his feet. We're thanking him because without you, where would we be? You have forced open our eyes. You know, that sounds quite heavy going, but it means that we didn't want it. We were in darkness and we weren't interested in getting out of the darkness. Just as most people are not interested in coming from darkness to light. They're happy, wallowing, almost like animals in their mess. because they believe that if I'm not enjoying now, I'll sure be enjoying tomorrow. So let me continue. This is the illusion. You know, that no matter how much I'm suffering, don't worry. There's always a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. So if I keep going, I'll get peace of mind and it'll all work out and I'll be happy and I won't need God. Don't talk to me about God and so forth, so on and so forth. So this is the kind of... So back in, when I came on board, there was nothing. But when we got our hands on Back to Godhead magazines, it was like treasure arriving. And we'd race off out there into Oxford Street or wherever we could find. And I can remember usually 10p was the going rate for a Back to Godhead. So it's like a... And I can remember one of my favorite places. It would be just after we got back to Vedanta Manor. We just moved in here. I used to enjoy taking my box of BTGs and going down to Southall every Saturday, because there was a family of and they used. I used to go with a few other devotees, and there was a family of Hindu family, and they'd feed us this beautiful prasadam. So that was one of the reasons I went to Southall every Saturday, because this lovely family would invite us into their house and feed us these beautiful, you know, the beautiful sabji, chapatis and everything. And then after that was finished, we'd happily go out onto the street. And I thought to myself, well, because I was always a very, I was always determined to be top. I don't know what you call that. But I liked sitting on top, you know. And there was some story yesterday about, you know, two devotees in a van, and one of them tied, you know, that Dalai Tai was telling about the guy. I was hoping that was just with tongue in cheek and it wasn't deadly serious, you know, because we did things like that. I don't recall actually tying anyone's stuff, but I do. Apart from the beautiful meal and then distributing Back to Godhead in Southall, you see, I had my little. I was thinking, if I go to Southall, the chances are that I'll sell more Back to Godhead, because there's a lot of Indian people down there. Southall's a Hindu environment, you know, so they'll all love to take the Back to Godhead. Ah, Hare Krishna! I'll buy one. But it didn't really work like that. No. Because a lot of the people I'd meet, they were telling me, but we know all these things. We have all these books already. but I think in my favor, I became the first one to distribute 100 Back to Godhead magazines in one day, you know. So that was my moment of fame. I came back. I'd finally cracked it. But there was other things, you know. You're talking about little tricks that we get up, and I'm sure these things still go on. I'm not, you know, Sitapa will know, and the lads will know more than me now what goes on these days out there in the streets, you know. But I can remember that every weekend we used to come back from our traveling, you know, and we used to report. We used to stand before Radha Gokulananda with our report, with all the finances and all the books distributed. You know, we would tell them exactly what we'd done this last week. And there was this one devotee, he and I were always like this, trying to be the top. And I can remember that we didn't really talk to each other about what we'd done, because we wanted to report it first to Radha Gokulananda. But somehow or other, I found out what his party had done, and they had beaten us. But not by much, right? So before the time came for the report, I disappeared up the motorway. I think it's to that service stop that Vishwambar still goes, just the service stop in the M1 up there. And I was out there for about an hour or two, just passing out, you know, enough books, because I knew how much they'd done, so I knew how many more books I had to do out there. And this is about 5 in the morning, just after Mangal Arati, you know. Even I used to do things like that. I guess lots of you guys still do things like that, 24/7, and you know, having fun. That's what I remember. It's probably an age thing as well, you know, youthful exuberance. I would do anything. and we'd have fun doing it. That's the thing I remember about my early days in as a brahmachari and so on and so forth. It was always fun. And there would be a lot of competition, but it would be fun, you know? So I think it's important to bear that in mind too. It's the most honorable and glorious thing that we can imagine to do, and that is to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books to these unfortunate souls in the Kali Yuga out there. And Prabhupada is so happy with us when he sees us doing this. Of course, he encouraged that those who are not in the front line can be in the rear assisting those who are going out. So the pujaris and the cooks and the devotees who are busy with the other fundamental things too, they have to also be focused too, focused on their service. But that service is equally important as well, because what we're all doing is that we're assisting those who are actually doing the business of distributing this knowledge for the fallen conditioned souls in England as we speak, unfortunate in Kali Yuga. So I brought lots of things to refer to and read from, but I don't think I'm going to need to do those things. Some stories, perhaps. I don't know. We've reached time now where, if anyone wants to ask any questions, maybe that's what we can do now. But those. Thank you very much for being kind enough to hear whatever it is that I've got to speak from Bhagavad Gita and about some experience. So if there are any questions, or if anyone would like to add any comments or anything about books or so on and so forth. Mama, Hare Krishna.
Brought to you?
I have a letter that I could read if anyone is interested to hear something.
Be nice.
Vishwambar loves these letters. Okay, well, thank you. I'll read something just because you've asked. Only because you've asked.
Because you told me yesterday you have a letter, so I was waiting for that.
Well, there are two, but I'll read one. I have a secret to tell. These letters, when we received them, we were ordered more or less to send them to the archives. We could take a photocopy and all that and keep the copy, but we had to send these letters away, so I don't have the originals. But I received a third letter from Srila Prabhupada, which, and don't tell anyone at the archives, I didn't send. It's just because it has Srila Prabhupada's signature, you know? And he was just advising me in that letter. It was a personal way. He was advising. I'd not long been married. Back in those days, but I was young, and I was beginning to think maybe I didn't think this through so much, because not long after I was married, I began to realize that marriage involved a lot of responsibility and commitment, and so I struggled with all these things at that time. So I wrote to Srila Prabhupada. And he wrote back from Bombay or Mumbai. He said, I'm sorry to hear that you're struggling with your marriage. I advise that I've been speaking with Giriraj, because prior to that, I'd done some work with Giriraj. I was his assistant, and we used to go making life members together in Bombay. He was raising funds for the temple in Bombay. There was no temple at the time. This would be around 72 or something, very early, 70, before the manor. And so I did about 5 or 6 months work with him. And then, still being a young, hot-headed brahmachari, I decided to come back here and give up my... one of the decisions that I still sometimes regret to this day, but we have our journeys, we all have our journeys on our path back to sanity, as it were, to Krishna consciousness. And I foolishly gave up and came back to the West, came away. So Prabhupada was saying, Giriraj would love for you to come back and be his assistant. So why don't you come? We have no facility for householders yet, but come now, and then when there is facility, you can call your wife. So that was the letter that I got from Srila Prabhupada. Unfortunately, when my wife saw the letter, she became horrified because she believed that she would never see me again. So she prayed that I don't go. So there I was drawn. So there's the person sitting here before you. My spiritual master advises me to do one thing, and my wife advises me to do another thing. So, but I still have the letter with Srila Prabhupada's signature. So because Bhartyabhumi has asked me, I'll read one of these. And it talks about book distribution too. Prabhupada really did not talk about, you know, distributing his books. So this letter is dated February the 5th, 1972. My dear Kishore Das, and this time I'm in Edinburgh. I was going to talk about Scotland and Edinburgh and book distribution there, but that has to wait for another time now. You know, how sometimes, for instance, there was one time myself and my godbrother Sambanath, there were three of us. We went to Edinburgh, myself, Sambanath, and Tribhuvanath, with no money, hardly at all. It was literally living from hand to mouth, from day to day, from whatever we could get. And we started in I'll be very brief because I can go on and on a little bit, so I have to be very brief. Tribhuvanath and myself and Sambanath, Sambanath and I had started in Dundee, but to know it was freezing, no one was interested, and no one wanted any literature, and it was very kind of rough Scottish people who thought that we'd just arrived from Mars, actually, with the shaved heads and the, you know, would wear the dhotis in the snow. And these people in Dundee in 71, you know, it was like, what are you? You know, we tried. We gave it a month or 6 weeks or something, and then we decided to change tack. And some of the other devotees, there was a family that were living, they came down here, they had a little boy. Dhruvananda was his name. They came down here to the manor, and Tribhuvanath came up to join myself. And of course, the first thing is, what are we doing in Dundee? Let's go to Edinburgh, which is a busy, busy place. It's a big place. So we went there with nothing, and we started in a bedsit, and things just took off from there. You know, we'd talk to people. People would come to hear us and give little donations. We'd cook little feasts, and the feast would be like potatoes and porridge. Oatmeal and potatoes. Mashed potatoes, you know. Spice it up a little bit. Put a little butter on it. It can be quite nice, actually. But there was one point, you know, talking about book distribution, is that I remember that we eventually got hold of some literature. And I can remember that Tribhuvanath would always be very busy. You know, he would have to finance the temple. You know, we'd have no money. So he got this little motor scooter and fill it with spiritual sky incense, and he'd travel all over Scotland selling this incense and leave myself and Sambanath most of the time just to get on with things, basically. And there was one point I can remember in Princes Street in Edinburgh, there'd be the two of us, just this pair of us, and one would be chanting Samkirtan, chanting Hare Krishna, and the other one would be distributing the small books behind him, and we'd take turns, 20 minutes each. One would chant, and, you know, some people would be throwing things and standing in front of us and confronting us, and, you know, the Scotsmen can be quite, mostly they're very friendly people up there, very nice, but sometimes not, you know. And in those days, you know, now people know Hare Krishna, but when they didn't know Hare Krishna, it was a challenge to some demoniac, some materialists. It was a challenge. I met people in Glasgow where I was born, but I went there and I met even family members or cousins and people who would come and stand and, you know, threaten me, you know, and accuse me of, you know, somehow embarrassing the family name and so forth, you know, and this, that. Those are other stories, but distributing Ishupanishads or whatever it was at the time, I can remember just I would be distributing and Sambanath would sing. And then I would sing and Sambanath would follow me distributing and so forth. So Just see where we've come now. 200,000 pieces of literature is our goal this year. Even last year, so far as I remember, it was 100,000, and no one believed it was possible. And we managed to do 130, I think. And we all thought, what a miracle. And now, 12 months later, look. Prabhupada would always encourage us, double it. And we always thought, this is impossible. But of course, Prabhupada would say, what is it? Impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. Thank you. And he proved it. We don't believe it, but Prabhupada always had faith, you know. So, the letter. See what I mean? See, you started something. Don't let me go on much longer. Dear Kishore Das, please accept my blessings. I beg to acknowledge receipt of your letter, dated December the 30th, 1971. And I have appreciated very much the sentiments therein. I can understand that you are learning our philosophy very nicely. So, if you become very convinced in this way, and I want you all to imagine that this is written to you, not just to me. This is written to you also. I can understand that you are learning our philosophy very nicely. So, if you become very convinced in this way, and if you preach very vigorously in Scotland or wherever, then I think Krishna will give you every opportunity to establish this movement very solidly there. I attended the Scottish Churches College in Calcutta. And I can remember that the Scottish professors were very fond of philosophy. So, I think if you are very much determined to preach to learned persons, that they will appreciate very much and come forward to help you. Simply, if the standard of our routine work is maintained very highly, that is, if we steadfastly perform our daily program of rising early, cleansing, chanting 16 rounds, holding kirtan wherever we are, at least twice daily, reading, worshipping the deity, going on samkirtan, like that, if this routine work is always done nicely and never neglected, then all our success is guaranteed in whatever we do. But if this, our regular Krishna conscious program, is allowed to slacken, then everything else we try will fail. That is the simple formula for success. So I am very pleased that you are determined to start a nice center in Edinburgh. And this will please me very much to hear regular reports how you are doing, because I think we have been trying to start something there for some time. If you are able to present our philosophy to the student class, that will help. And also, they will be interested to buy many books. So try for it, and Krishna will give all assistance. Hoping this will meet you in good health and cheerful mood, your ever well wisher, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Hare Krishna. Thank you. So I think we have to stop now. So I wish you all well, and I'll do whatever I can too to help with the Christmas marathon this year. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.